Hi, everybody. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. We've got another installment of our ongoing series, Black Queer Rising. It's where we get a chance to bring you the stories of Black queer folk who are pushing boundaries and blazing trails. I spoke with Moore Kismet, also known as Omar Davis. They're a 17-year-old non-binary DJ changing the sound of the EDM, that's electronic dance music, industry. Now, 2 years in a row, Moore was featured in Billboard's 21 Under 21. At the age of 16, they became one of the youngest artists to ever play Lollapalooza and Electric Daisy Carnival. We sat down and talked about their burgeoning career.
When I first discovered electronic music, I was in my seventh grade computer science problem solving class. And
that's such a great answer. Seventh grade computer science class.
It sounds so bougie, but like that's where it happened. So I'm just like, our teacher said that if we're done with our work, then we have free time on the computers. So for me, free time on the computers at the time meant going and writing scripts, because at the time I also wanted to be a screenwriter. And as I was doing that, another way that helped me concentrate better while I was writing and getting ideas down was listening to music. Now, I had grown up around R&B and hip hop all my life because, well, you grow up in a Black family, that's bound to happen anyway. But I randomly stumbled across YouTube one day and I found the song Iris by Audion. I don't know what happened, but just something in me just like a switch flipped off. And it was so uplifting and so beautiful. The melodies, the drums, the steady pace, the upbeatness. And like, it just really gave me like a glimmer of hope. Nothing I've ever listened to before ever made me do that. Like, obviously, yeah, if you listen to like Outkast or Marsha Ambrosius in the car, like you're bound to bop your head like to some Flowetry. But like, I had never heard anything like that in my life. And like my bare minimum introduction to electronic music before that was like the occasional Calvin Harris song or like one Skrillex song from an old EP from like 2010 or 2011. So when I heard that song, I was just taken aback and I was blown away. That is what ultimately, like when I was like 7, 8 years old, I was like, huh, I should try making music. Let me see if I could try making something like this. And so I bounced back between completely like different softwares with completely different functionalities. And I just kind of started learning more about what it was exactly that I wanted to start writing. As I learned more about that, I kind of like got caught on to more artists in different fields. So it went from like Audion and Above and Beyond and Seven Lions to Sultan and Ricky San and all the people that I listen to today. And like my taste and my style has morphed so much over the past few years that it's really given me an opportunity to fully understand what I personally wanted to write. But the beginnings of it all was this like random trance track that I found on YouTube when I was little that just really kind of kickstarted everything for me and my passion for writing electronic music.
I love that. Although I have to say this, like part of my heart both jumped up and broke when you name check both Outkast and Flowetry, because at 17, presumably this is like old music for you.
This point in my life, yeah. But when I was growing up, like that's all my mom played, like Chrisette Michelle, Outkast, Ledisi, Khalees, like a lot of Black artists. Like, that's what I grew up on. That's what my mom played in the car. And then ultimately, it just morphed into, like, listening to the radio. And then, like, on car trips with, like, family, we listen to stuff like that. And we just have a ball because it connects us to parts of our childhood and parts of our lives where we grew up on that, where that was something that we listened to as frequently as the music that we listen to in present day.
You stand for.
beautiful to see more people writing about queer love, and especially people like me who are writing this from a perspective of knowing that our love and our feelings and our emotions have been suppressed for so long by a vast majority of people who just think that it's disgusting and putrid when it's not. And I love writing songs about love. And I know it's like so weird considering I'm now newly single, but like, I think it's such a beautiful thing to write about love. And it doesn't even have to be about like romantic love. It could be about platonic love. You could write like a whole bop about how much you love your best friends and how you would die for your best friends. I literally have a song like that on my album that's like towards the beginning of it. That is just, it's just an instrumental that encapsulates the joy and the energy and the vibes that I get from being around my friends on a daily basis. And, you know, it's such a beautiful thing to establish that and to create a new culture, because it wasn't widely accepted at the time. And it was always marketed as something completely and utterly different than what it was actually being written about, even though since the dawn of time, we know that queer love songs exist. We know that queer artists exist and are writing songs from their own experiences as queer people and as Black people and as people of color, other people within marginalized communities. It's so important to understand that these stories have a much broader impact on music and the course of where it's going, like say 5, 10, 15 years from now, because me writing songs like Vendetta for Cupid and Flourish and Autonomy are going to have a longer lasting impact on other artists who want to write the exact same kind of songs, but to a more accessible audience than the vast majority of like straight love songs.
Are folks ever surprised by the depth of your experience and analysis as a teen? And if so, how do you respond?
A lot of people do like say I'm like very wise for my age. And while I've never wholeheartedly believed that, I know that I was raised in an environment to be conscientious of other opinions and to take into consideration that some people will not have the same viewpoint as me, or that will not have the same knowledge and ability to process things like I can. And I've understood that. And, you know, part of understanding that is doing my level best to, when they ask for it, to help guide people through things and to help them understand things that they might not be able to understand at that time. And I think for me, if people just say like, wow, you're really wise for your age, I just say thank you and move on, because I really don't think it's for me to like harp on something like that when I'm just a kid. Like, I might have a deeper understanding of the way the world works, but that's just because of how I was raised. And that hasn't really changed much. By the way that I grew up is to always speak up for what's right and to always make sure that in speaking about what I feel is right, that I speak with eloquence and that I speak with passion and that I speak with calm.
Back to music for a sec. You are going to be airware with Air Buddy all year long. You are in all the great lineups. Who, besides yourself and the tracks that are clearly being slept on that you see as some of your favorites, who are you most excited about and why?
Who am I most excited to see at some of these festivals? Nostalgics, Tsunami, Whipped Cream, Leotrix, Killamanziga. Like, there are so many incredible people that I know and that I love listening to that I can't put like specific names, and like those are the only ones that I can really think of, but I know there are like so many more.
So more, this conversation that we're having is part of our ongoing series, Black Queer Rising. When I say to you, Black Queer Rising, what does it mean to you?
It means that our stories and our experiences are finally reaching the forefront of attention, to the point where if people think we're annoying, people think we're annoying. And that's their prerogative. Our stories have been embedded into the foundations of music since the dawn of time. And we've made that known plenty of times, but no one wants to believe us. Nobody wants to hear, nobody wants to listen, nobody wants to fully understand why we create the things we create, why we share the things we share in our music and in our art. It's because of the fact that this is us. If you can come from your own experiences and tie that in, why can't we? And when you say Black Queer Rising, to me, it means people like me, people like Killaman's Ego, who is a Black queer artist, who are really just paving the way for more people like the two of us to really have a deeper understanding of where our music comes from, of where we want to go with our stories, of what we want to tell with our stories, and then continuing onward with that path and inspiring more people to do the same. That's what that means to me.
More Kismet, DJ, music producer, and may I say, a little bit of Black queer genius up in here. Thank you so much for joining us on The Takeaway.
Thank you so much for having me, Melissa. It's been an honor.
I throw my feelings away, 'cause I watch you on, watch you on.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.